Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject is chelation, and specifically the TACT2 trial. TACT stands for Trial to Assess Chelation Therapy. And in part one, we talked about the background on chelation therapy and why the National Institutes of Health investigating chelation therapy using millions of dollars of taxpayer money. But it's worthwhile because we may have a remarkable therapy that can help us reverse cardiovascular disease. Taking part in a new study, the TACT2 trial, today's guest, Dr. Dana Cohen, one of my good colleagues here in New York City. She practices integrative medicine, and she's one of the investigators for the study. So in part one, we outlined an opportunity for patients. Three things need to happen. They have to be over 50. That's easy. They have to be diabetic. That's pretty easy. They have to have survived a heart attack. Okay, that's a little more restrictive. There are less of those folks around, but there are plenty of diabetics who've had heart attacks. And those are candidates for the TACT2 trial, wherein they would come to your office or to the office of one of the investigators, get intravenous chelation therapy. It's about a 3-hour procedure. They do it for 40 consecutive weeks over a period of a year. And they can do this for free, correct?
Yes. Yeah, and if they miss a week here or, you know, here and there, that's okay. So it's not quite consecutive.
They also get free vitamins, right? Vitamins are part of this.
Well, the vitamins, if they may get a placebo vitamin or the real thing, yes. Everything is, there is no charge to see the doctor. There is no charge to get the treatment if you meet the eligibility. And if you know of anybody, give a call. We're trying to get, they had, I think it was over 1,700 participants in TACT1, so we're trying to enroll that many. I think as of this week, so far in the whole country, there's only about 50 people enrolled, and it just started.
So it's important because what we need to demonstrate is we need to demonstrate that there's public interest in this because NIH grants are generous, but if it's like they appropriate the money and nobody shows up, they're just going to rescind the grant and no progress will be made. And, you know, and I think, you know, why is there less fervent interest in this? I think, number one, I think people are interested more in a pill or a quick fix procedure, and this takes time. But number two, I don't think that this is getting a lot of encouragement from cardiologists. I mean, because how many cardiologists are there in the United States? They're probably like, I don't know, 50,000 cardiologists. And each and every one of them should be saying to their patients, hey, you know, look, I don't do this therapy, but it's interesting, and here's an opportunity for you. Go to your local investigator, because every major metropolitan area has some investigators, and get this done. It might help. It's probably not going to hurt. Why aren't they doing that?
Yeah. You know, I wish I could speak for them. I can't. I think there is bad taste in their mouth from before. They really thought it, a lot of them really thought it was, like you said, quackery. Uh-huh. And they can't believe the first study. I don't know. I can't speak for them, except that I don't think doctors like to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's almost Galilean, you know, in its, you know, in the intensity of the reaction. You know, Galileo was famous for challenging the view that, the planets and the sun revolved around the Earth. And, of course, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah. I mean, and this is, I mean, it is a long procedure that's, it's hard for them to wrap their head around it, too. 40 procedures where you sit with an IV in your arm 3 times a week. Three hours a week. It's hard for them. Doctors also don't want to, many doctors don't want to learn something new that they know nothing about. It's sort of scary for them, I think.
I think it just goes against the paradigm. What was interesting is that, as you know, because this is real drama that we both experienced, is I was in the initial group that designed and approved the study. This is maybe, as I said, it was like 10 years ago or more. And we were intensely suspicious at first. We were concerned that the NIH had an axe to grind. They had an agenda that what they were trying to do was, because look, studies can be skewed one way or another. If you want to prove that a drug works, you can stack the deck to show that the drug really works and then generate multi-billion dollar profits. We've seen that again and again. And if you want to debunk something, you can make the criteria for the study so twisted, so stringent, that it'll, even if it's helpful, it won't show a benefit. So we were suspicious at first. We partnered with, as you said, Dr. Gervasio Lamas of, he was at hospital in Miami, Mount Sinai Hospital. Very prestigious hospital. And, a decent guy and a guy with great research credentials. We said, and it took a little bit of guts. We said, okay, let's put it to the test, because fully realizing many of these doctors, had a dog in the fight, that if the study proved negative, they would be losing income, frankly. It would debunk their practice, of using chelation therapy. Furthermore, it might even put them at risk of losing their medical license, because if you were to advocate a practice that's been shown in a study not to work, I mean, that's a great basis for receiving medical discipline, right? You're doing something that goes against science. So the doctors, including myself, a small group of us, we said, fine, do the study. And it took a long time. And it just, years dragged on as the study went on. And in fact, there was a big protest from quackbusters, as you know, in the middle of the study, saying, what in the heck are you guys doing? This is crazy. You're spending government money to study utter heresy, the worst form of quackery the government is underwriting. They challenged the ethics of the study. The study was halted briefly while they looked at whether it was even ethical to involve patients in such a harebrained scheme. The research committee finally decided in favor of continuing the study. We weren't sure that the study was going to get completed. We had trouble recruiting patients. Finally, they did complete the study. And then we had to wait and wait and wait while they analyzed the data. They finally presented the data, and it turned out it worked, as you described in part one. But you remember that Journal of the American Medical Association didn't even want to publish it at first, because they said, this is too crazy. I mean, the study looks like it works, but it doesn't make any sense. But finally, they published it with an editorial. And I've never seen this before in a medical journal, where they published the study, and then in an editorial they said, we don't understand how this could possibly work, but we have to admit that it's pretty good science. We have to publish the study.
Stop, because you mentioned JAMA, but people don't realize, this is published in JAMA, the Journal for the American Medical Association. That was a huge deal on our part for the TACT-1 people. That was, very interesting, and the whole history of it is just so fascinating to me, even from the very early stages when it started in the 50s.
They could make a movie out of this. I mean, it's got suspense, it's got drama, it's got, villains and heroes, and, really,
exactly.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that being said, we need patients. We definitely need patients. I mean, I think just the whole idea that NYU is a participating center here in New York, that's huge.
Yeah.
New York University Hospital is a participating center, and hopefully we're going to get, and they're going to be signed on this week. So hopefully that's going to, there are cardiologists there that are going to be throwing, their patients to their center.
By the way, that's the place I trained at. And I got to tell you, it's a very conservative place. It's so conservative that when they discovered, you know, after I kind of kept my cards close to my vest while I was there, but when I embarked on integrative practice afterwards, they were a little ashamed of me. And I was invited by a group of residents to speak to them on the subject of integrative medicine back in the 90s. And the chief of medicine there, who is a kind of crusty old guy, is no longer there, put the kibosh on it. He said, you know, he said, you don't want to hear from Hoffman. Hoffman is doing quack medicine. And, you know, so to see that 180-degree turnaround, you know, is remarkable.
And what a loss to those people, because people who are listening to this should know that you are one of my mentors. I worked with you many years ago, and the knowledge that I've gained from you has been just so important to me and so worthwhile in my career.
Well, that's high tribute coming from you, for sure, because, you know, you are outstanding in your I think, selective use of therapies that make sense. You know, I think there's a lot of things out there, and some of them are, frankly, kind of wackadoodle. You know, and
for sure.
And we in the field of integrative medicine have to be discerning about the therapies that we advocate for our patients. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a flavor of the month club. Yes, there's some very exciting things out there, but we have to evaluate them for A, safety, and B, plausibility. And I think in my career, you know, there are a few things that I've done that have been, you know, like a lot of things probably that I've done that have been a little out of the mainstream, but that I felt vindicated about ultimately. I think one of them is chelation therapy. I think another is the use of natural thyroid, which is also thought to be heretical by some people in the endocrinology field. But more and more, we're seeing that move to a greater degree of acceptance and an understanding that it really works. Oh, vitamin D is another one. Yeah. Intravenous vitamin C. How about that? You know, with now studies showing that it can fight cancer, a therapy that, you know, we have been deploying for many years. You know, we can think of a lot of the yeast connection is another one. I think that's another one where, you know, we were talking about that. That's crazy. You know, how does the things in the gut cause all these weird symptoms like brain fog and, you know, autoimmune disease and, you know, skin problems? And come on. They'd get over it. And now it turns out that the microbiome and yeast or bacterial overgrowth is such an important facet of research on why people get sick. So anyway, so, you know, enough of self-congratulatory statements. But I think we're on the right side of this thing with chelation, and it's going to prove beneficial. Talk to us a little bit about the vitamin part of this, because that's kind of interesting how that came to be. Why give vitamins at all in this study? Why don't you just hang a bag of IV EDTA and just let it be?
Yeah. So, and actually, since you'll probably be able to help me with this a little bit better, but I think there's a couple things. So you are chelating or taking away some minerals. So not only, you know, heavy metals, there are some minerals that are being sort of taken out along with the heavy metals, right? So I think part of the multivitamin is to give some multi-minerals. Mm-hmm. But I also think the other part is antioxidants. So it is believed that lead is
a free radical generator. A pro-oxidant.
Free radical generator, right, mm-hmm. right. So as we're removing and mucking up lead in our body because we're making these things, we want to give some antioxidants that help combat, that help fight those free radicals. Mm-hmm. So, and those are the two things that I know about. Is there anything more?
Well, you know, so we had to decide, you know, in the beginning, you know, I think at that point you were peripherally involved, but not right in the decision-making process, because I know you're part of the American College for Advancement of Medicine, but I think that you weren't sitting literally in that committee at that time.
No.
And so what we decided was, and we talked this over with Dr. Lamas, we said, look, in the community where patients are getting treated, they are getting lots of vitamins. And so we'd like to discover, you know, if the vitamins are doing the trick for these patients, or is it the chelation? So realistically, nobody just hangs a bag of IV EDTA. That's not the way it's done. So if you want to really see how it works, you're going to have to evaluate the role of vitamins. So we came up with two vitamin groups. One that's just de minimis, just the very least in terms of mineral replacement of things that the EDTA might pull out. And then there was another group that got the more aggressive, like you say, antioxidant, a more comprehensive supplement program that turns out helps a little bit, but it's not the source of the benefit, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a really interesting part that I didn't, that totally makes sense to me now. Yeah, so I got it. So it's basically to see if the vitamins had the main effect. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and, you know, one outcome of the study might have been this, is that the group that got the vitamins plus the chelation did great, but the group that just got the vitamins alone did great, so why even use the chelation? The vitamins are doing the heavy lifting, you see. So, because we were seeing good outcomes, but, you know, when we do chelation, a lot of stuff happens. We sit the patients down. It's a teachable moment. We say, okay, you're going to do chelation because you're doing chelation. We got to give you all these vitamins. And so, I think you, having done a lot of chelation therapy, it's an opportunity to tell patients about diet. It's an opportunity to tell patients about exercise. It's an opportunity to change their whole lifestyle as part of a comprehensive cardiovascular prevention program, deal with stress too, you know. So we don't just say, come on in, we'll hook you up like a gas station, you know, like a filling station.
Yeah.
You know, we do a comprehensive lifestyle modification on people with cardiovascular risk.
Yeah, exactly. Although I do have a few patients that come in from, has a cardiologist, doesn't want to hear anything, what I have to say about diet, and just wants their chelation because they read about it, which is, you know, it's not optimal, but they're still getting major benefits from that.
Well, they still will benefit because, you know, I guess there's part of the study, the TAC study, is that you're not allowed to talk to them about changing their diet, right? Or are you?
No, we don't talk to them about changing their diet.
So they may on their own, but they're randomized so that some of them may on their own. You know, goodness, you know, if you have a heart attack, it's hard to keep a patient from paying some attention to diet, right? And, you know, they're going to go to their other doctors who are constantly, you know, hitting them over their head about diet, especially since they're diabetic. So both groups are getting advice about diet. So if there's some improvement over and above the diet recommendations, then we'll see it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and patients, like I said, are coming in maximally medicated, you know,
yes,
in the regular world, in
right,
the allopathic medical world. So, yeah, they're the best that they're going to get medicine-wise.
Right.
Medicine and their doctors are taking care of their diabetes and taking care of everything of that.
Which was another concern in the study, and I'll tell you why. Because let's say, you know, we're studying the effect of vitamin E on cardiovascular disease. And, you know, so you say, let's find some patients with cardiovascular disease. It would be unethical to tell them to stop your beta blockers, stop your statin drugs, stop your blood pressure medication, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they're on a lot of medication. So when you're already on so much medication, how much benefit is something that you add on going to confer? So that's even more impressive that these patients were medicated up the wazoo, and they still got a benefit. You know, they were all on statins virtually.
A huge benefit.
Yeah, they were all on,
I
mean, you can't find a diabetic who's had a heart attack who's not on a statin. It's you know, would be malpractice not to put someone
on. I have 73% were on statins.
Okay.
92% were taking aspirin.
Yeah.
Plavix or Coumadin.
Blood thinner, sure. Yes, right. That too.
Right. And 73% were taking statins.
Which all goes to show you, because
cholesterol was not the issue.
You know, which all goes to show you something interesting is, you know, we're looking at the endpoint. You say the endpoint is subsequent events. That means that a pretty significant number of people who are taking aspirin, blood thinners, blood pressure medication, diabetes drugs, statins, ended up getting events, right? Because they're not bulletproof.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what they're taking, they're still at high risk.
For sure. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. So let's give the details once again so that people can, you know, spread the word about this trial. And I hope that we get some signups from the New York metropolitan area. Or, hey, you know, this is a broadcast that goes all across the country and around the world. If you're in a foreign country, I don't know if you're eligible. You know, if you can get a visa, yeah, maybe. Good luck these days. come to America to get medical therapy. Good luck. When it comes to people who are in the continental United States, just because, you know, you hear this broadcast and it's emanating from New York and Dr. Cohen is practicing in Manhattan, doesn't mean that if you live in Chicago or Los Angeles or Seattle, that you can't find a participating doctor as part of the TACT study, correct?
Yeah. Yes, correct. And that website is www.TACT2.org. So TACT2.org.
And there's a directory of physicians who do it geographically, right?
Yeah, and you can call them, and they can also, you know, you speak to somebody there. They're a really incredible group. The group is actually out of Duke, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So there's two people, Duke and Mount Sinai in Miami. Duke University and Mount Sinai are both co-people doing it.
Great. So totally legit, you know, under the best possible medical supervision. If you come to the facility in New York, you'll be entrusted to the care of an excellent doctor, today's guest, Dr. Dana Cohen. Dr. Cohen, once again, give you the information about how to contact you.
So my office number is 212-787-1877, and my website is www.drdanacohen.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and all the best, and I'm sure we'll see each other around the campus here in Manhattan since we're neighbors.
Yes, I hope so soon. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.